Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball. How you doing, Tay?
All right. How you doing, Dad?
All right. Right on time, just like we scheduled.
Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah. We're not blanking out anymore.
I mean, hopefully not.
This heat will blank you out.
Yeah, it is. It is hot up here. I was hoping that we had a bit of a brush with the hurricane. I thought it was gonna break the weather, but it has just been as sweaty as possible. Right through all the rain, all the grossness, it was still just sweaty.
Yeah, it is here too. It's supposed to be around 100 tomorrow.
Well, you know, we're in a weird place in the bar world right now, at least in America. Some bars are opening back up. Some are allowing inside seating. Some bars have never closed. Kind of all over the place. But one thing that I've heard a lot of is, like, people don't know how to be in bars and restaurants anymore. We've forgotten over the last year.
We've become feral.
I think so. Like, I have seen so many posts from, like, well-meaning service workers that are just like, please, like, don't, like, you can't strip naked and run around the bar screaming, like, please. Like it's... Yep, and I get it. You know, we've all gone through a very traumatizing year. There's a lot of stress. But, like, I thought that maybe for this episode of Neat, we could do a little run-through of some bar etiquette, some sort of how to behave in a service space. Because, hey, we all had a hard year. Maybe we forgot. Maybe we need some extra care, so we're being a little bit more demanding than we originally were. I think that's okay. But I think it's always good to kind of check in and say, how are we treating our service workers today? Because it sounds like not awesome.
Well, maybe we're trying to hurry up and get our drinks in before they close it back down again.
I mean, maybe, but that is not a reason to treat people badly.
It's no excuse for rudeness.
No, and I think that, you know, of all, like, it's funny. One thing that I think, and maybe this is just from working in a place like New York, and I'm sure other big cities have, servers have come to the same realization where sometimes I think what people are seeking in coming to a bar or a restaurant is not just the simplicity of, I want some nice food and drink. It's something more. They want to be taken care of, because especially if you work in a big city where, you know, you might not be treated well, your job is very demanding, it's very toxic, it's very overwhelming. You want a place where you can be treated nicely and served and taken care of. It's taking care of you on a deeper level than necessary. And we didn't have that for a year. And I also think that, you know, even outside of the pandemic, I think even before that, in bigger cities, there was a deeper need that customers would come in with. So I think I don't want to just, you know, talk about customers in a way that makes them sound like annoying, demanding people. Like, I get it. It's hard out there. You need a place where you can be taken care of, and I want you to have it, but I want you to be respectful of that place at the same time.
Well, you know, let's face it. Most of the time, at least as far as a guy, you go in there and you got the bartender back there, and you want the bartender like you, because bartenders are always cool, you know, they're the ones running the room. So you want the bartender to like you. You feel like you've accomplished something if the bartender likes you, but you could be annoying trying to gain that.
I mean, let's look at this way. I'm not telling you what to do or what not to do in a restaurant, but I do think if you follow my advice, it will absolutely make the bartender like you. And maybe you can even earn a free drink out of it. All right. And that's what everybody wants, right?
they all want the free drink
from the bartender.
Yeah, free drinks all around.
So this guide is going to be, it's not going to be telling you what you should or shouldn't do. And it also is going to be very America-centric, because that's the only service world I've worked in. Those are the only rules I know. Other countries have different rules. So don't, if you're outside of America, I will probably be wrong about a lot of things. But more than anything, I'm not here to lecture you. I'm just here to tell you how to be your best self for the customer service people that maybe you want to take care of. So let's start at the beginning. The beginning of your experience at a bar or a restaurant. You walk in. Hey, having your ID out is always a thing. It's funny that this is a point of contention that I've experienced a lot, but like, even if you look over 21, I have to see your ID. Somebody has to see your ID. It has nothing to do with whether or not you look your age, and everything to do with the fact that I don't know if you're not a cop on a sting operation, and I don't know if a cop on a sting operation isn't hanging out. We have to see your ID. It's not a question of how old or young you look. Just have it ready. I've had old people show up at my bar with no ID and get very angry that they have to be ID'd. It's just legality.
I could be your grandpa. What do you mean you gotta see my ID?
Oh, I've heard that. And I've people that have it on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, or have a picture of their passport on their phone, and they're like, don't worry, I'm of age. I'm like, that is so good for you, but it's not good for me.
Yeah.
You just, like, I know. It has so much less to do with us judging your age one way or the other, and everything to do with, hey, it's illegal, and the bartender themselves can be punished personally, like in danger of prosecution, if they serve somebody that is underage or just doesn't have an ID on them. That's how the law works. It's not just the bar that's in danger, it's the bartender themselves. So it's not about you or if you look old or if you look young. It's entirely about us covering our asses.
And a liquor license is a valuable thing. You do not want to be responsible for a bar or restaurant losing their liquor license.
So don't, if you want to take it as a compliment, you know, maybe you're a little up there in age, somebody asks your ID, take it as a compliment. But in either case, have it. Don't assume you can go into a bar without it. And nowadays, you know, here in New York, vaccine cards are required to enter a place of business if you're going to sit down and have food or drinks or whatever on your phone or the physical card. Like, just accept that however you feel about vaccines, it's required. So please, it's not the bar's fault. Don't fight the bartender. Don't fight the doorman. Just, you know, you want to have a good time? Come prepared. Have your ID. Have your vaccine card.
Just vaccinate. Don't denigrate.
I mean, you should be vaccinated. Please be vaccinated. But yes. All right. So you've come in the door. You've shown your ID. You've shown your vaccine card. Here's something that is maybe a little confusing to some customers, is how a bar or restaurant works. You know, sometimes you have a bar that has some tables that is just, you order at the bar, you sit at the table. Sometimes it's table seating, you've got a waiter at the tables, but the bar is just served by the bartender. Sometimes it's both, sometimes it's neither. I get that it can be confusing sometimes, and especially now, maybe some of the restaurants you're going back to that had table service now just have bar service. It can be a little confusing. It is always better to ask than to seat yourself. By and large, no matter what the case is, someone needs to know if you're sitting in the restaurant. So if you just walk in and seat yourself, it's generally a bad move. So I think one of the best things you can do is just ask somebody if you haven't discerned how the restaurant operates ahead of time, right?
Yeah, if they have a sign up that says hostess will seat you, that's a pretty good indication that you should wait there for the hostess to seat you. But if they don't have it, then the next thing is walk up to the bar and say, hey, do I need to have somebody seat me, or should I just pick a table anywhere? And they say, oh, sit wherever you want. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and then, you know, a lot of the, like, that's what a lot of places are doing, you know, like you get your little QR code on the table, you scan, you see the menu, that's great. But just, it's always good to ask if you're confused. it seems like a silly thing to say. And if you're listening to this and you're like, well, of course, yes. But I'm saying this from the other end of things where I like, and I'll get into a bit more about online reviews later. But one of the worst Yelp reviews I ever got about me personally was when I worked at this bar in Soho, and somebody wrote just this horrific review about me. And at the time I had blue hair, and they wrote this review about this little blue haired girl that was running around doing everything else but paying attention to their table and didn't take their order and wouldn't bring them silverware and wouldn't bring them water. And this server was the worst server ever. Well, I was working at a bar that didn't have table service, and I was the bar back. So there's
you weren't even the server.
No, there was no server. There were no servers to be had. You had to order at the bar. They would give you a flag. Your food came to you. That all happened fine. But they were angry that there was nobody like clearing their dishes or bringing them water. That was the style of the restaurant. That was the style of the bar. But I got this giant, like, three-paragraph write-up about me that luckily my bosses at the time thought was just kind of funny. But, like, that's, you know, you just didn't know what kind of restaurant you were in. So it's always good to know. And, yeah, so just, you know, check out the scene. Maybe your favorite restaurant has changed. They've got less service to work with. So maybe they're doing bar service. Maybe it's less interactive. Just check in with them. You know, it's always... we're humans that work back there. You can always just ask us. We'll give you the answers straight. And that in mind, like, seating, like, usually if there are servers, sections are a thing. So, like, a server has this section of, like, tables. You know, a different person runs over the same tables. So when you, like, are set somewhere and you're like, well, I want to sit at that table over there, and they say, no, you can't sit there, a lot of times that might just be because, as simple as, the person that's running that section is very busy. They have a lot of tables. The person whose section you're in doesn't have as many tables. And it does complicate things if you got to move somebody into a busy section. So it's okay to ask to be set somewhere else if you don't love where you're sat. But if you're told no, it might just be because the section you're asking to move into is serviced by somebody that's very busy. This is just behind the scenes knowledge. You're allowed to do with it as you will.
Yeah, Mom and I made that mistake one time when we went to a restaurant, and we went in, and Mom always likes, there's a little two-top that's near the window, and she always likes to sit there if it's available. And when we went in, they tried to seat us at like this high-top table for eight people, and we're like, we don't want to sit there. We just want that little window seat. So the hostess seemed kind of hesitant, but went ahead and sat us there, and it ended up that the guy that was the server for that section was like off duty in about 30 minutes. So he didn't want anybody seated in a section that he was going to start with, I guess. And then he wasn't going to be there when we finished. So he wasn't going to get the tip, I guess. So anyway, he treated us like we were just dirt coming up there and sitting in that table. And we ended up drinking our one drink and getting up and leaving because of the way he was.
I'm going to express a controversial opinion, and that's that if somebody's put in your section and they don't understand how sections work, they just ask to be set somewhere, the hostess allowed them to sit there, it's not fair to be abusive to them. I feel like I say that's controversial. I think most servers that are good at their jobs would agree with me. Like, that's at some point, somebody has to be the stopgate for that kind of stuff. And I would say the hostess needed to say, actually, no, you can't sit there. Yes. Changing your table. Sometimes you think it's fine and it screws over somebody behind the scenes and you don't know. So I think it's always just like, I don't know. I think a lot of these problems would be solved if you just talk to your servers or your hostesses like humans and expect them to talk to you like a human and everything will be fine. But when that doesn't happen, there's a breakdown. all right. So, somehow you've been set at your table. You've shown your ID. You're at a table. If you're at, like, let's say, like, you're sitting at the bar. This is an interesting thing. I don't think a lot of people know that this is maybe a difficulty for bartenders. Should you start a tab or no? Dad, if you're sitting at the bar, what do you like to do? Do you like to put a card down and just run it? Or do you like to close out each time that you're having a drink?
If I'm going to be there and I know I'm going to be there for a while, I would rather start a tab and not have to fool with paying for it every single time that I go back up there.
Okay. So, I think that's a better... At a couple bars now, we've had the joke that I want on my tombstone, I want the words, close it out for now.
Yeah.
It's not, like, closing it out for now, you hear it a lot behind the bar, and it's like, okay, so I'm going to go through every step of you leaving, and then you're going to come back. Let me give it to you from a practical standpoint, especially in the age of COVID. Every time I have to handle your credit card, run it, close it, have you sign something else, I am handling your stuff, you're handling, like, flips. I have to wash my hands before I ever touch a drink again, before I do anything. So it is a bit of a time. It takes time on both ends. And also, which we'll get into more when we talk about tipping, but, like, I'm running your card every time. That's a separate credit card charge every time. So if you're ordering $5 beers and you want me to close out every $5 beer you order, the restaurant and sometimes the servers are paying fees every time you're doing that. Mm. Now, I get that there are reasons. There are reasons you might want to keep your card on you, which I understand. Maybe a bartender lost your card. I've seen that happen. Maybe you personally want to control your drinking, so you want to make sure you don't have an open tab, so drunk you can't keep ordering. I get that. I'm not saying there aren't good reasons for closing it out for now. But if you don't have those reasons, if you just think it's a thing that maybe it's okay to do, this is a good way to maybe encourage, like, goodwill with your bartender. Let your
if you want him to
open.
Like you, yeah. If you want him
yeah,
to like you,
like. Like, I'm not saying there were plenty of reasons to keep your card with you, and that's fine. If that's how you feel, no worries. But keeping your card open, especially now with, like, breadcrumb and stuff, where you can, like, they can run your card and hand it back to you. So your tab is open. It's open, but you have your card on you. So if you get drunk and walk out the door, or you're absent-minded and walk out the door, or whatever, you're leaving with your stuff. You're fine. They're going to close your tab at the end of the night. It's fine. But it's a good move to not close out after every drink if you're at the bar, because there's a lot of work, a lot of hygiene that has to take place, and like a lot of processing fees that come to play with every time you close your card.
Yeah, now I've done it both ways, but I like, if I'm running a tab, the ones where they run my card and then give me my card back and keep the tab open. But I have done it where they keep the card as well.
I love that too. And I also, a lot of bars will have an automatic, like, if you walk out on your card, there's a 20% gratuity. And I rarely had that put on me, but I think that's great. No, like, yeah. I would have tipped you that, if not more anyway. So absolutely,
right.
That's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is a personal opinion and not anything that I would expect from anybody, but I have left my card at bars before. And when I leave my card at a bar and they still have my card and it's safe and it's been charged appropriately and nothing funny has happened with it, I tip them for having my card. That's just me. I'm not saying you have to do it, but I don't think it's a bad idea.
You say, yeah, would you put that tip on my card? Oh, damn, I left it again.
I love the people that show up and they're like, I think I left my card here. I'm like, yeah, you did. No worries. It's here. It's fine. And they're like, oh, okay. So can I get another drink? I'm like, oh, you're going to start again? We're going to play this game again? But no, it's not expected. But yeah, you know, if you wanna leave your tab open, it's a good thing. All right. So let's actually get you a drink. We talked a lot about other stuff. Ordering drinks. Now, this is all just sort of conjecture, but you know, this is a booze podcast, and I want you to get a drink you want. And I think a lot of times, if you walk into a bar, to figure out what kind of drink you can order at a place, the best starting point is just to look at the menu. You know, if you see a menu that's kind of a nuanced cocktail list, it has fresh juices, it has house-made syrups, that sort of manages your expectations. You can probably get a classic. You can probably get some well-known cocktails. If you see Sour Mix and Triple Sec and Apple Pucker and stuff like that, that doesn't mean it's a bad bar. That just doesn't mean that that's the place you order your egg white classic whiskey sour, right? Like, I think it's good to understand what you can and can't get at a bar before you order something that maybe you're going to not be happy with.
Yeah, I read another thing that said when you're going into a bar, especially if it's busy, the one thing you don't want to do is order some crazy drink that you saw in a magazine and say, can you make me one of these? Like, every bartender knows every drink that's ever been made, and they've got it committed to memory.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I've never... I want to reiterate again that this is not me telling you things that you should feel bad for ever doing. It's more of a behind the scenes guide as to how to make your bartender love you. It's okay to ask for a drink we can't make, but there are some tips and clues from the back bar and the menu that can help you avoid doing that. So if you look at a back bar and it's a full out back bar, you see chartreuse, you see Aperol and Campari and a whole selection of gins and some fun modifiers, I think it's totally fine to be like, oh, make me a last word, make that, like, whatever, make me a bijou. Like, I think that's fine. Absolutely. You can expect that bar to make that, and probably they can, and probably they're going to be psyched to make it. But if you walk in and it's got like 40 taps for beer and some whiskey, like, maybe that's not your cocktail bar. Maybe that's a bar that specializes in beer, and that's where you're at. You know? Like,
yeah.
If they've got a 4-page wine list and, you know, some aperitifs behind the bar, maybe you're at a lovely Italian wine bar and you should lean into it.
We were at a place a while back and they had a small cocktail list, and we'd been there drinking. I'd been drinking mostly beers, but this bartender, I'd been back forth and talked to him several times and was joking around with him and stuff, and we had been there a while and I'd had several beers, and so I decided, this was shortly after we did the Sazerac episode, and so I decided, I said, hey, you think you can make me a Sazerac? And he's like, a what? A Sazerac. And he said, I don't know what that is. I said, well, you got rye whiskey, don't you? Yeah. I said, you got Peychaud's bitters? I got bitters. No, Peychaud's bitters. I got these bitters. He had no idea what I was saying. And I said, never mind. And so I guess he felt bad. So he said, here, have a shot of whiskey anyway, and just poured me a shot and gave it to me. And I said, well, aren't you going to have one? And he said, oh, yeah, sure. And he poured himself one, and we both drank our shots.
You know, and I think that is an example of a great bartender and a great customer response. I asked you for something you can't do. Okay, I can't do that. But here's this. And you're like, oh, we'll have one. Like, I think that's fine. And I think, like once again, service people are people. Like, we're people. If you ask me for something I can't make, like, my fear is that you're going to go Yelp me because I can't make it. But if you're like, oh, you can't make that, no problem. Like, that's fine. Like, okay, good. Like, I'm good at what I do. Maybe it's not that. And that's absolutely true. Like, you're at a good beer bar, they're going to be able to tell you tons about beer. Maybe they can't make you the best cocktail in the world. Like, I think that it's kind of funny because I think the trend in the industry is to have bars that do everything. But I think we're losing the ability of bars doing one thing well.
I was just going to say, and this wasn't a big bar. I mean, you're talking about it had seating inside for maybe 15 people, and then it had a deck that would hold maybe another 15. So they're not going to have a full-service bar that will make every drink you've ever known, because that wouldn't be economical for them.
I think that we're, you know, we joke a lot, like, in the industry. Like, somebody made a list of all the, like, something ampersand something bars. And it's all like coal and steel, like sour and sweet, salt and stone. Like, they're all like, the names are all the same. And they're all like this heavy wood interior with Edison bulbs. And they try to do everything. So they'll have like beer shot specials for the low end. They'll have an $18 cocktail menu. And they'll have like a intense wine menu that's all natural wine. And also like an intense whiskey, like an intense back bar. And they don't do anything specifically, and they don't do anything well, but they kind of do everything enough to take money from you, and it kind of bums me out, because, like, I prefer a bar that this is what we do, and this is what we do well, and we don't do cocktails. Maybe we don't do wine. Maybe we don't do beer, but we do what we do well. Like, I think that in the need to, like, sort of Walmartify bars, like, we kind of are losing bars that can have individual identities, where you go in and you say, what's good here? That's a great question to ask. You go into a bar, you want to know what to drink, ask what's good here. They'll tell you. That bartender is going to tell you. And you know what they're probably going to tell you, and I know from experience, they're probably going to tell you the cocktail that they make the most and is easiest to make, or the drink that they pour the most. But you know what, that's still going to be the freshest, best drink you're going to get.
Or something that they usually pre-batch, because they do a lot of those.
Yeah. I mean, even when it comes to taps, like, a tap that runs 60, 70 times a day is going to taste better than that weird beer that they pour maybe once every like couple of days.
Yeah.
Like, that's always the best thing to drink is what sells. And I love bars that accept that. Like, yes, we're a dive bar. Have our beer and shots. Or like, yes, we're a wine bar. Here's our wine. Yes, we're a cocktail bar. Here's what we do.
Well, that's like Sip was one of Mom's favorites to go to. And it was a wine bar, basically. They had all kinds of different wines. But they did keep some like high-end import beers on hand for people that didn't drink wine. So, you know, you could get those. They were just cans or bottles. They weren't draft. But at least you had a choice if you didn't drink wine. But mostly what you go there for is to drink wine, and then they just had the occasional beer for those that don't.
And, you know, I think that's fine. Like, I've definitely been to bars where, like, sometimes when I'm in a wine mood, it's like they have a red and a white, and I'm like, yeah, I'm drinking the bar red. And it's not great, but I'm not going to complain. But It is, I think it's something, once again, as an engaged customer, if you can figure out what a bar does great, you're going to have a better experience. If it's not in your wheelhouse, if it's not something you like to drink, that's fine. Order what you like. But I think it's always a good step to, like, see what that place you're at does well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say you sit at that bar. You've had a couple rounds. Things are good. You've ordered a couple drinks, and your bartender says, your next one's on me. You got a buyback. What does that mean? What should you expect?
The bartender likes me. He likes me. He really likes me.
You started a tab. You ordered a drink that they like making. You showed your ID. You've earned the bartender's favor. Now they're giving you a free drink. What should you do about that?
Man, you're almost as cool as if Dave Matthews sang you a song.
Well, all right, I'm gonna give you the behind the scenes. Why does a bartender give you a free drink? Well, first off, there is a very non-disingenuous reason. There's a good reason. They like you. No bartender is gonna give you a free drink outside of like the rare occurrence where like an owner's an asshole and he's telling you you have to buy his asshole friends a drink, and that's rare. No bartender is gonna give you a drink that's gonna encourage you to come back if they think you're a dick. True.
So if they take a picture of you and put you up on the wall and say, don't serve this guy, is that a dick pic?
Yeah, that's... yes. Absolutely. But this is the modern era. That just gets passed around on our like family like text message. No. If somebody's giving you a free drink, if you don't know the owners and you aren't using your privilege to take advantage of it, it's because we like you. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to be chill. You have to be somebody that maybe we've engaged with, we've had a good conversation with. Maybe you've said that you live in the neighborhood or you live nearby or you like the place. Great. In general, after your third or fourth drink, it's normal for a bartender to buy you back something if they like you. That's like magician knowledge, and I'm not supposed to tell you how the tricks work, but that's true.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I never spent much time hanging out at bars, though. I mean, I was mostly at restaurant bars, but not bars in particular.
Well, now the second reason we do this is maybe less warm and fuzzy, because we want tips. Also, it's not disingenuous. We've read you as somebody that's chill, and if I give you a free $15 cocktail, you might throw like $2 or $3 my way. So I've still made a bigger tip percentage. I've used my buyback well, and you get a free drink, you get a discount, I get a little bit higher tip percentage. I've cemented a better relationship with you. We're good. You might come back again. So we both benefit from this.
Now, I never had that happen at a bar, but I did have it happen at a hot dog stand.
That there makes was a lot of sense for you, Dad.
When I was in high school, there were some guys that I knew that worked at this hot dog stand. And so they had these nice big mugs that they served you their root beer in, you know, And so they would make it known, if as long as you left them at least a $5 tip, they would turn their head and not notice that one of the mugs might be missing when they came to get the tray off your window.
So you got a free mug.
Yeah, you got a free mug out of it. Wasn't a free drink, but we couldn't drink till we were 16. So,
well, that's a gift nonetheless to
for
encourage
a tip.
I think it's also like behind the scenes stuff. Like buybacks are a built-in thing to most restaurants. Like you start out the night as a bartender. The servers are working off the bartender's tab, but like bartenders start out with a buyback tab. So that's the amount of money I know I can spend basically to encourage
more drinking.
Well, it's not always more drinking. In fact, I'm a big fan, and this is me because I don't like to overserve people. I like to buy back people fries or burgers or like snacks, like, and that works great too, you know. But yes, it is to encourage you to hang out longer, feel good about me, want to like come back here again, and that is built in. Most bars start out with the bartenders having a tab that they can run to a certain extent to bring back customers. Now,
do you ever give them their last drink as the one you buy for them?
Absolutely.
Like, here, this one's on me, and it's your last drink.
Oh, well, no, I'm cutting somebody off. I'm cutting somebody off. Like, that's already happened. Now, I will say that I have done the thing where when I think somebody's cool, but they're a little too drunk and they want one more drink, I'll be like, this is my next shift. Your first drink's on me, but I need you to stop for tonight. I need you to drink water and get in a car. And that's a strategy that works. I feel like that's a strategy that works. But if you've been given a buyback, you might wonder, like, how do I compensate for this? Like, somebody gave me a free drink. They bought back some of my food because I was chill. Like, what should I do? And I think that, you know, once again, you don't have to do anything if you don't want to outside of the regular tipping 20%. But as somebody that goes to my friend's bars sometimes and will get a hookup, like get a free drink or get some free food, the rule that I usually follow is either I will tip as if the free stuff I got was part of my tab, or I will just like tip a percentage higher, like 25% instead of 20. I think you should do more. If somebody hooked you up, I think it's right to do a little bit more. But it's not like somebody bought you an $8 beer, you have to tip $8 for that. Like, no, just tip a couple bucks. Like, it's fine.
All right. Good to know.
That makes sense. Yeah.
$5 for a mug or $2 for a beer.
I mean, you probably should have thrown down some money for those free mugs, Dad. But there you go. Yeah, $5.
Hey, back in them days, a $5 tip was a big tip.
Well, and this comes back to like the idea of like being a regular at a bar. And a lot of people think like being a regular at a bar just means you show up a lot. That's not true. Being a regular at a bar is something that you earn. That means that you regularly... And that doesn't mean you throw down money. That is not it. My favorite regulars have not been people that have thrown down like tons of money. It's people that respect the rules that I've laid out, generally are chill, tip appropriately, and then you'll see the world open up for you. You'll get free drinks. You'll get special treatment. You'll be taken care of before everybody else. But regular status does not come from just putting your butt in a chair 4 days a week. Doesn't happen.
Showing up regularly doesn't count because assholes show up regularly.
Yes, they do. And I've had those people that say, I'm here three nights. I see you three nights a week. And I'm like, yes, and you're mean to me three nights a week.
Yeah, and I suffer through having to deal with you three nights a week.
You tip me 10% three nights a week. I don't like you.
I will pay you that 10% to stay home.
Exactly. Now here's the caveat. The caveat is, as far as giving buybacks, getting free shit, is something went wrong. Okay, so your server does a bad, your bartender does a bad, your food comes out late, or your drinks come out wrong, whatever. And so your server, your bartender offered to buy something back for you. This is maybe, once again, this is a controversial opinion. I don't think you have to buy back for that. I don't think that. I think that's okay.
Okay.
Like, I don't think you have to tip on top of that.
I've never experienced, so I'm not sure. And the other thing is, you might not know how much it was. What if they gave you some kind of fancy cocktail, and you didn't know if it was a $5 cocktail or a $20 cocktail?
Well, here's the thing. If you tip 20% after somebody's made a mistake, I think that's fine. That's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. Like, I think it's fine. You should still tip. That is an important thing to do. But, like, let's say, like, it's a busy night at the bar. I forget to put in your appetizers. You remind me 20 minutes later, hey, our appetizers still aren't out. And I'm like, oh, shit. And I realize I didn't put those in. And I put them in. They come out. And I am not a fan of blaming anybody else for my mistakes. Like, if I make a mistake, I'm going to tell you I forgot to put it in. I'm not going to say the kitchen's backed up or, oh, the printer was broken. I'm going to tell you the truth. I messed up. But I say, I messed up. Your food is in, and it's also on me. I'm so sorry. That's it. That's done. It's on me. It's off your tab. I don't expect to be compensated for that, but I do hope you still tip like a decent tip percentage at the end of the night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, we had a situation where we were at a restaurant and they came out. I don't know whether they just forgot the appetizer or what, but we waited a long time. The next thing we know, here's the main course. The appetizer would never come out. So I just told the waiter, I said, hey, we never got that appetizer, so would you just take it off the bill? You know, I wasn't complaining. And so the manager came over, and the manager was apologizing, and we're going to get that out for you. And I was like, no, that's all right. We probably didn't need it anyway. You know, our food's here now. We don't need an appetizer. That's fine. And so we were almost through eating. Here they come over with the appetizer then. And bring it to the table and stuff. And I'm like, look, I don't want it now. I just wanted it off the bill. Oh, we're taking it off the bill, too. So then they said, well, do you want us to put it in a box? And I felt bad about that because I'd already said, no, don't, you know, just take off the bill. We don't want it. And so then I felt like if I put it in a box, then I'm taking it home and having my cake and eating it, too.
Well, okay, first off, Dad, I think that you're the rare occasion of somebody that something goes wrong and you're like, eh, it's fine. By and large, people use something going wrong as a reason to penalize people, to make them feel bad and stupid and wrong. So I think that they were just ready to kick. And this is true. I've worked at 10 different restaurants. Like, every restaurant I've worked at, when something goes wrong, you kick into worst case scenario. These people don't see you as human. You have to deal with them as that. And, like, that sounds scary, but that's true. Like, it's not every, like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to put your food in. It happens. It's like, no, I have to both buy your food back and apologize and also buy you something else and take care of you. That is what a lot of places kick into because honestly, and this is something that, like, I don't think people understand is, like, this whole, like, Yelp, like, the online review things, like, it actually does factor into employment. People can write bad reviews about you and get you fired. And sometimes it's not like, I mean, I mentioned that I joked about the review that was about me, but like there are a lot of restaurants out there like run by these people that they don't have any experience in the industry. They're just money men that are on top of it. And they see bad reviews about the restaurant and they will pinpoint that person. They will fire them. So everybody's afraid of negativity.
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah, because to me, you know how that was the running joke we've had before is over ordering on appetizers and then we can't eat our meal. So, you know, that was one of these things where we didn't get the appetizer, but the food's here. So why do I want the appetizer now? And it was probably a good thing because I would have just walked away being stuffed, you know, this way it was more manageable.
Well, and I mean, I feel like I know my family enough to know that y'all aren't the people that create problems in restaurants, like, you know, it's like
fine. Yeah, that's like fine.
Whatever comes out is fine. My food came out wrong is fine. And I think that's a good mindset to, like, you know, to remember. It's like, these are just people. They're just working off of the, like, whatever happens. A million things can go wrong to have something go wrong with your meal in particular. And I'm not saying that you should just accept it and roll over and be like, it's fine. But, like, when someone tries to course correct and be like, oh, we're sorry, that's it. Like,
yeah.
But
the only thing I ever get upset about is like going carry out, or not carry out, but delivery. And you get there and you got eight people and seven of the meals show up and one doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, and they leave one out. That's the only thing that bothers me, because now what do? Nobody can eat. Everybody's going to wait because the one person doesn't have any food. You know, here, you can have mine and this. No, I don't want yours. I want mine. That's always a problem. And I hate when that happens.
Well, and I mean, I think a lot of that's too. It's like with this shift over to so much carry out happening after COVID, it's like there was no extra. Nobody is being paid extra to take care of your orders. Nobody's getting paid those extra wages.
Mm-hmm.
Like those delivery fees are going entirely to delivery service.
Right.
So these people are getting paid nothing, mm-hmm. and they're running on a bare bones staff mm-hmm. to get your orders in line.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's just, it's part of the system. Which is what, you know, what, once again, what we're trying to make you aware of, how it's like right now. okay. So back to the flow of service. So you've got your food, however course corrected it's been, hopefully it's come out fine. How long should you stay? Sometimes restaurants are very crowded and they're running on quick table turns, and that is involved in how many people are staffed, how many people are serving at the time. And even, this is true, I've worked in places where it's held against you if people sit too long. You are considered a bad server if you can't get people to leave. Now, you as smart individual sitting in a restaurant can discern for yourself. If there are open tables, if it's not busy, sit as long as you like. Hang out. No worries. If it's a busy restaurant and people are maybe like refilling your water and asking you if you want more, don't take that as personal against the servers. It just might be the shitty restaurant trying to get you out so they can sit more people. And I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying that is how it works.
Well, you know, the tables are their money. I mean, they need to turn it over. Usually a restaurant can't get by with just having one group at each table each night. So,
I mean, we generally plan, and this is going to sound kind of crazy, but like if you're talking brunch, we're talking 30 to 45 minutes is what we expect you to sit for.
Mm.
When we're talking dinner, we're talking 45 to a minute 15. Those are normal quoted times in like high end restaurants that we expect you to show up and then leave.
Well, the restaurant has to be in on making that happen too, because like there was that one place we went, you know, a couple weeks ago, and we were there for like an hour and we still didn't have our food yet. And it wasn't because we delayed ordering or anything like that. It just took that long. Nobody was complaining. But, I mean, we didn't get our food until after we'd been there over an hour.
No, I don't think that's on the restaurant. Like, I think they were just a big group and it was a small restaurant. But, like, it's more of a thing that, like, it's not fair. Like, it is something that is held against servers.
Mm-hmm.
Turning tables is this concept in restaurants where if you can't get a table in and out in the expected period of time, you're bad at your job. So even if you're being the most kind, like encouraging server, if you have allowed your people to feel too comfortable for too long, you're kind of not doing your job. You want them to leave. You want them to leave after an hour. And I don't agree with this. This is not how I'd run a restaurant, but I've worked in enough restaurants to know like this is part of it. So once again, you as a customer, you're not doing anything wrong hanging out, sitting as long as you want to. But if you feel like people are asking you to leave, your server is being kind of rude, like, do you need anything else? Do you need anything else? It might be because they've got a GM up their butt telling them they got to turn that table because that's how they make their money.
That makes sense.
So your meal is done. We're done. We're closing out. This is where things get really fun. And a lot of this has to do with America specifically, as I mentioned. But first, I'm going to say, closing out, how many cards is too many cards? Now, we live in the age of Venmo, of Cash App. Putting 15 cards down on a table, I don't think should happen anymore. And I'm saying this as someone that's had to do this. It is not necessary. But more importantly, if a bar has a policy of a limited number of cards, please respect that. Running a card not only incurs a separate charge, it also takes time. separating your tab into 15 different numbers takes time. It takes time, and often on the same computer that three other servers are working off of. So when you decide, oh, we spend a bunch of money. We're 15 top. We spend a bunch of money. We should get whatever we want when we want to close out. We should each be able to close out for our individual amounts, and we want to split this basket of fries three ways and this appetizer three ways. Like, we should be able to do that. I don't think that enough people think about what that means on the back end. How long that computer is going to be, like, dominated, how much time that's going to take, and also all the fees that that's going to incur.
Yeah, you shouldn't divide up that much. I mean, if a lot of times though, they'll come to the table and say, how will the check be? And when, of course, if you say, I've got it, and it's just one person, oh, good. You see a sigh of relief if it's a big group.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But if they do say, well, look, I've got this half and they've got that half, at least they know going into it how to divide it up or something like that, you know?
And I think it's fine to, like, have, like, this is how we're dividing things. That's fine. But, like, when it's an absurd amount of people, and I worked at a restaurant that had it was both written on the menu and also to book a large party, you had to agree to no more than 5 cards per table. You had to agree to that. So there was a 15 top party, and I was managing that night, and the server had told them this is how many cards we take when they tried to have everybody pay for each of their stuff individually. So, like, literally, like,
wow.
One of those situations, like, everybody wants to pay separately. This person wants to split the basket of fries with this person. And the server was like, no, sorry, we don't do that. We take 6 cards maximum. I can only split it equally because it's a massive tab. So after being insulted by that, not even the head of the party, it was just a rando at the party, asked for the manager. I was managing the night, came over, and he looked at me and he said, so I just want to know, are you and your staff stupid or lazy or both? Because you can't split this tab up 15 ways.
I would have said, you can leave now.
Well, you know, the problem is that I am unfortunately working for people that have, like, as many restaurants, you're working for owners that don't have a lot of sympathy. And, like, so I know I have to manipulate the situation in a way that I can't be rude, but I also have to make sure that this person gets what they want, but I also want to provide a, like, a sliver of pride for me and my server. So I have to go, like, the super nice, fake nice route and be like, oh, no problem. Like, that is our policy. It's printed on our menu, but you're very special customers, and we want to prove to you that we're not dumb or lazy, because we're not. So we'll do this for you, especially. But in the future, we can't do it again. Is that okay?
And there will be a 50% tip added on at the end to handle this for you.
Oh, no, it was an autograt. But also, this is a fun thing. So we didn't give free refills on soda, but a bunch of the table drank soda. And there is a refill button that you can push that doesn't charge.
Mm-hmm.
We on our menu, we charge for every soda,
mm-hmm.
but you can put a free refill in if you're being nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, we're going to split this tab 15 ways. We're also going to charge them for 38 soda refills.
There you go.
No worries.
Yeah.
And we're going to autograt mm-hmm. it. No worries.
Mm-hmm.
So we autogratted it. It was fine. But it was, like, wild to me that it's like, okay, if you know anyone that works in service, they are neither lazy or stupid. Do you know how many jobs we have to do?
Yeah.
For minimum wage?
That was,
for nothing?
I don't know that I could have held my tongue on that, even if it would have meant my job.
I mean, but, you know, but when you're dealing with people that need their job, that live paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thing, the one of the things about cards, and this is going to lead into our final note, which is about tipping, which is the big thing, especially in America, is that for every credit card we have to process, we have to pay a credit card processing fee on that tip. And it may surprise you to learn that that fee comes from, and legally can come from, the tips of your service workers. It doesn't have to. A lot of restaurants pay those credit card processing fees, but it is a workaround. that it was put in place not too long ago by restaurant owner lobbies, so they can charge servers for the processing fees of their individual credit card charges. So when you have that owner that says, no, I want you to process 12 different credit cards, 13 different credit cards, it's because they can take the money for it from your tips, which is wrong, but leads us into the biggest, I think, thing that we want to talk about today, which is tipping.
Yeah, the whole tipping industry.
Let's talk a bit first about the history of tipping.
I was amazed at the history of tipping.
It's not great, right?
No.
You know, there's this kind of like sweet story that gets passed around, like, oh, tipping's buying your drink or buying a drink for your bartender to have later. That's where a tip started. And then there's like a bit of that that comes into play, but that's not really how tipping became popular in greater Europe and definitely not in America. So tipping started around like the European aristocrats in like the 17th century, but Americans adopted the practice in like the mid-1800s, and it really got popular in the country after the Civil War.
Exactly.
Now, why was it popular after the Civil War?
Because they were looking for some way to put people to work and not have to pay them, just like they weren't paying them under the system before.
Exactly. It was a way to pay newly freed slaves less money. They could be hired in unskilled positions. There was a lot of service industry, restaurant industry, and they could, this is a European tradition of tipping. It's cosmopolitan. It's high end. You know, we pay you a certain amount, or your customers pay your wages based on how good your service is. This is it's just a continual form of slavery in its earliest form.
And it is a blatant form of racism.
Exactly. And you know, it kept this power imbalance in place where not only the hiring people were above the servers, but also the customers themselves were above the servers because they provide their wages. And this is a continual problem. I mean, to this day, the people that work in the service quarter are still largely comprised of minority populations. It's largely women over men, and it's largely people of color over white people. So it's still a way to base people's wages not on a fair living wage, but rather what the upper class deigns them to be deserving of.
There was this guy named Kerry Seagraves that wrote a book in 2009, Tipping, an American Social History of Gratuities. And he was quoting a journalist from 1902 who said that he was embarrassed to offer a tip to a white man. Tips go with servility, and no man who is a voter in this country is in the least justified in being in service. So that's the way it was looked at in 1902. And I said that the immorality of paying an insufficient wage to workers who were then forced to rely on tips was acknowledged. In 1916, there was an anti-tipping study, and it was done by a guy named William Scott, and described tipping as an aristocratic custom that went against American ideals. The relation of a man giving a tip and a man accepting it, it is as undemocratic as the relation of master and slave. A citizen in a republic ought to stand shoulder to shoulder with every other citizen with no thought of cringing, without an assumption of superiority or an acknowledgement of inferiority.
And I think, you know, that, to be honest, as somebody that's worked for tip wages for many years, this initial argument about, like, tips are wrong, or it should be different, it really went against, like, this idea that, like, well, wait, in certain jobs, I've made a lot more than what minimum wage would be. But we're forgetting that vital aspect of the inequality that comes in with other tip positions. So I want to give you all how it works today, because if you think that's the past, it's not, it's today how it works today in tip situations. So maybe you think, like, I tip my bartender so well, I tip my server so well, and they make a lot of money. That money doesn't just stay with them. And also the idea that only your front-facing server or bartender, which by and large, it's a lot easier to get a job in the service industry if you're somebody that society accepts for a variety of reasons, that those people get those jobs and they get a higher tip percentage, but they are also, from their tips, paying out other people. So, for instance, me as a bartender working as a point position at a bar, I am tipping out the runner that runs food. I'm tipping out the busser that cleans things. I'm tipping out the bar back that provides, like, brings backstock for me. All of those people are also paid a lower minimum wage, the same as I am. We're all paid a tip minimum wage, which is lower than the regular minimum wage. Now, here's where you get into the fun stuff that I would say most, if not all, the restaurant owners I've worked for have done, where they present it to you as the bartender, hey, your staff works really hard. Don't you think it's only fair that they make a higher wage on slower nights for, like, a tip percentage? And of course, me, I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense. What I didn't know for years was that, oh, wait, so if they take a larger percentage of the tips, it means that you don't have to pay the gap between the tip minimum wage and actual minimum wage. Because that's the way the rules actually work on the book. If that person doesn't make enough in tips to equal the minimum wage, the restaurant has to compensate them. But if the restaurant works like a lot of restaurants I've worked at, they move around the numbers of the tip percentages so that they pay everybody out of the tips. The bartenders and the servers make less, the runners and the bussers make more, and the restaurant doesn't have to pay anybody any more money. Do you see how this can be abusive?
The sub-minimum gap, or sub-minimum wage, as I understand it, unless I read it wrong, is $2.13 an hour.
It varies state to state, but that is the base minimum, yes.
That's just unbelievable. And so what they're saying is that if you worked a 40-hour week and you didn't average out to whatever 40 hours times 750, which I think is the minimum wage right now, if it didn't work out to that, then the restaurant is liable for paying you the difference between what you got and what that 40 hours would have been at minimum wage.
Yeah, but if they have a budget of your tips to change the differences around and make that up for, they will do it. And trust me when I say they will do it. I've worked for a lot of places, and I'm not about naming and shaming. That's something I stand by, because it's not because I want to protect any restaurant I've worked for. It's because it's endemic to the industry, and it's not about one restaurant versus the other. I've worked at restaurants where the management fee has been taken off our tips, and we didn't know it, because if you're working in a staff of 30 people and maybe your tips seem like $4 or $5 short than what you might have worked the math out to be a night, you're like going to chalk that up to your bad math. But when that $4 or $5 goes up against your entire staff and pays the manager, which legitimately happened to me, like, they were pulling management fees out of our tips for like years. You don't know the difference, because tipped money is this ephemeral thing. Nobody counts it. Nobody knows where it goes. It's not linked back to any place. And a lot of restaurant owners use it in pretty nefarious ways. I mean, going back to what I said, why I don't love it when you have 10, 15 cards to close out your tab, that individual charge on each credit card can be taken from the server's wages. This is not a normal thing that happens at every restaurant, but they can legally do it. This was something that was lobbied for by the restaurant lobby. And now they can take credit card processing fees from servers' tips, and restaurants will do it.
Now, this is how bad it is. The Department of Labor conducted an unusual compliance sweep of 9,000 full-service restaurants between 2010 and 2012, and they found that 84% of them had violated the sub-minimum wage system.
Oh, yeah.
So that's become a common practice. That's not unusual or just those guys looking to make a few extra bucks. This is a common, ordinary practice in this industry.
All this is to say, when you're tipping people at a restaurant, they're already up against so much.
Up against the odds.
It's not fair. Yeah. And it's not as, don't get me wrong, like, if a minimum wage was fair, and that was what we got paid, and tips weren't a thing anymore, or there was a service charge that was a thing, I would love that. I used to be very against that, and the more I look at it, the more I see it happen in other countries. Like, I think it's a great thing, because honestly, tipping creates this pot of money that, as far as I've seen, owners, like, bad people just manipulate however they want to cover their costs, and they leave you the leftovers.
You know, as far back as 1916, Congress had tried to do away with the tipping system, or at least do away with the sub-minimum system, that you had to pay people at least minimum wage. And I couldn't believe in 1916, the restaurant lobby went up against them and got them to drop that. And I would have thought they would have had a strong restaurant lobby in 1916, but apparently they did. But still, seven states adopted that there was no subminimum wage, that you had to pay at least whatever minimum wage was. And I don't know if that fell by the wayside, but you know, one of the things that they said is, well, this is to, you know, ensure that you get good service. As a matter of fact, there's even the myth going around that that's where the word tip came from, that there used to be plates sitting out that you would put coins in for your tip back in the day. And it said on the plate to ensure promptness. TIP, to ensure promptness, and that's where the word tip came from. But that they did say it's a myth, that that's not it, although they didn't offer where it does actually come from, why the word tip.
There's a couple different linguistic like traces for it, and I mean, I do think like an early, or like when we look back at like the UK, like the aristocratic roots of it, there was this idea of like buying your server a drink, like, I want you to have a drink after this, you did a good job. I mean, however you feel about that, the way that it was imported to America was specifically to put a certain class of service individuals in this nexus of being judged not just by their employer, but also by the people they serve. And being at the whim of both of them because they were considered the lowest class of people.
Well, studies have shown that tipping is not an effective incentive for performance in servers. It also creates an environment in which people of color, young people, old people, women, and foreigners tend to get worse service than white males. In a tip-based system, non-white servers make less than their white peers for equal work. Consider also the power imbalance between tippers who are typically male and servers, 70% of whom are female, and consider that the restaurant industry generates five times the average number of sexual harassment claims per worker, and that in many instances, employers have allegedly misused tip credits, which let owners pay servers less than minimum wage if tipping makes up the difference.
What do you think standard tip percentage is, Dad? What do you think it is? Tell me, percent-wise.
Probably 15.
Okay, you're wrong.
Well, I mean, you mean what you should give or what does get given?
What does get given? That's fine.
Okay.
You said 15,
yeah,
right? And you think that's okay, right?
No, I would think 20 is the minimum. 15 is what I think does get given.
I think you're right, but here's the thing. I've worked at restaurants where if you get a regular below 20% tip percentage, you're brought in for a meeting. You're up to be fired if you get below a 20% tip percentage. So this is not about how good you did your job. It's about how people tipped you. So people that think, oh, 15% is fine, your job is on the line. Like, I'm not saying it's right, but that is something, that's a metric that I've been under multiple times. I've had owners hold me under that metric. But it's funny, too, because you also get judged for it on the opposite end. I've been judged, like, my tip percentage, my last job was really, like, 30%. And I got called in on a meeting to be like, you get too high of a tip percentage. We think you're cheating the business and giving things away. So, like, I was punished for getting too high a tip percentage. But other servers lose their jobs over getting too low a tip percentage. So, when we talk about tipping, like, I wish it was just this nice thing you did for people. But it actually does impact their jobs.
Well, I was looking, you said that, and I knew I came across something. I saw a survey that they did, and it said a waiter percentage for average service, average tip is 17%, 5% tip 20% or more. 5% tip 20% or more, but their average tip is 17%.
Well, if I can leave you all with one thing, it's that, and I'm saying this not from what servers want or what bartenders want, but more from what servers are punished for if they don't meet. 20% is the standard. Mm-hmm. It's this fun hat trick where, oh, what, tip whatever you want, but servers get punished for you not tipping 20% or more. And if you're like, that's not fair, that's not on me.
Well, sorry. You know, somebody needs to update Emily Post because they said EmilyPost.com suggests 15 to 20%.
It's 20%.
Emily also, Post is wrong.
Yeah, F you, Emily Post. It's a pandemic, okay? If you're not tipping your service workers 20 to 25%, stay home. Cook your hot dogs. It's fine. But, like, these people are working opposite Miss Delta. Take care of them. And I mean, like I said, like, this whole episode, I feel like I felt very angry during all of this, and maybe I was releasing some raids. Thank you for letting me do that. But, like, it's not, I'm not telling you how you have to behave. I'm telling you how, if you want to take best care of your servers, we actually are people that have a lot of nuanced feelings, and a lot of stuff goes into the job we do, and I'm just giving you some notes on maybe how to make our job a little easier. You don't have to do it. You don't have to, because at the end of the day, you show up, we're still going to serve you just the same. We're still going to take care of you just the same. But, like, seriously,
well,
it's hard out there. It's terrifying. And these people have been off for a year. They're trying to make back money. They're scared. Please take care of them.
Well, I think the real answer is they need to do away with the sub-minimum wage. And everybody needs to make at least the minimum wage. And the minimum wage, I mean, they've you know, done a lot of things to move it up to $15. $7.50 isn't enough. And then you still get tips on top of that. I mean, I'm not saying that you'd move everybody up to minimum wage and then don't tip. You should still have tips on top of that. And restaurants should not be able to touch those tips and do anything with it. If there are credit card charges, the restaurant should be responsible for those. That's a business expense. That's not to come out of the workers.
However you feel about the service you receive, please, if you think it's good, if you think it's all right, if you think it's pretty swell, take care of them. Because it's been a hard year, and they are up against so much. They're up against so much that they can't fight against. A lot of the stuff we talked about, it's not going to change anytime soon.
So take care of your bartenders and your servers.
They're, you know, you get that free drink from a bartender, it does mean that they want you to be there because they think you're somebody that they want to see again. All right.
Hey.
Like, at the end of the day, we do still love our jobs. We love serving you. We do love that. But we hate all the bullshit that comes with it.
And when a bartender thinks you're cool, you are.
I miss my regulars. I mean, honestly, like, one of my biggest heartbreaks is I walked away from a job that was deeply abusive in a lot of the ways we've talked about. And the people I miss the most are my regulars.
Yeah, I used to walk into a bar and everybody would yell, "Norm!"
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
Oh, well, you're not old enough. You never saw Cheers, did you?
No.
Okay, well, that's why.
But seriously, y'all, I hope this wasn't too of an angry episode of this podcast.
Angry rant.
I'm sorry, I just, your service workers and your bartenders, they love you, and they honestly do enjoy what they do, and they want to take care of you, but we can't control much else than that. So please treat them well, tip them well. If you can't tip them well, if you can't afford it, that's fine. Stay home, though. Stay home. If you can't tip them well, stay home. 20% is a baseline. 25 is good. 30% is amazing. They've lived through a plague.
Yeah,
the plague is still out
just
there.
Just order through Grubhub and pay twice the amount you should have to pay.
Even if you're ordering, I'm sorry, even if you're ordering through Grubhub, 20%. 20%!
Grubhub will take it.
Order one less order of tater tots if you can't afford it, okay? Like, legit. Take care of your service workers. Take care of your bartenders.
I need my tater tots.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't order your tater tots. Tip for your tater tots.
Tip for your tater tots.
Tip for your tater tots. Tip.
There's no such thing as a free tater tot.
There is no 15%. 20% is the baseline. 25% is good. 30% is we're buddies now. I'm not saying you have to do it. And if you're like, F that, I won't do that. Oh, well, just think about what they're living through, man.
Yeah,
they're
Emily Post.
So much. Seriously. Like, that, they've got judgment coming in from both ends. They've had to live through a pandemic. These people are still there serving you, taking care of you. Take care of them. I request it.
All right. Taylor has spoken, so listen up.
All right. Well, and hey, to all you service industry people that might be listening out there,
let us know if it works.
And I have so much respect for you. If you need me to show up and be that belligerent customer that has no hands, so, like, you don't have to be responsible for me, just let me know. I'll do that for you. I think I mean it. I love you all. Service industry workers, the rest of you are fine too.
The drinkers, we gotta have the drinkers.
Drinkers are good too. You know, the drinkers aren't the people I'm talking about. I know that. Okay, the best regulars I've ever had at my bar are not the drinkers are them. It's not the other people I'm talking about. But that's all different. All right. Hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been.
Well, we got that one covered good. This should be like a double album.